Hey, Film Wax Radio welcomes back the Vermont College of Fine Arts MFA in Film program to the show. The Vermont College of Fine Arts MFA in Film offers a two-year student design, project-driven graduate program of professional mentorships for your scripts, fiction and nonfiction filmmaking, and hybrid and transmedia projects. Each semester begins with an on-campus residency week of screenings, workshop lectures, and crits, along with preparation of an independent study plan for your own personal projects. Then, students and faculty return home to work independently and meet monthly via Skype as projects unfold. The MFA program is designed to fit into the life you have and the films you make. Exciting, affordable, and intense, refine your creative vision as you develop intensely personal stories in an independent practice. Visit vcfa.edu/film for more details. And now, on with the show.
This is Greta Gerwig, and you're listening to Film Wax Radio.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to episode number 427 of the podcast. The name of the show is Film Wax Radio. My name is Adam Sharkoff. Thank you for tuning into the show. This is Two Old Friends of the Podcast return. On this episode, we have Frederick Wiseman back again. I've met and interviewed Frederick Wiseman many times. I think this is only the second time he's been on the podcast. I thought he was on three times. I am wrong. So if I put that out there in the world, I was wrong. But I did interview him at least three or four times now. A couple of times, it was kind of for other things, not for this podcast. And what I'm going to do is I'm going to package them all in the coming days, and I'm going to put them back. I'm going to put them up on my website and maybe on YouTube as a special kind of package of all of my conversations, like a retrospective, if you will, of my own. And then the other friend on this podcast is I'm welcoming back Ramona Diaz, who was on several years back with her documentary "Don't Stop Believin'," which was about the band Journey and how they brought on a Filipino man to replace their longtime singer as frontman of the band. Anyway, this is a new documentary. We're going to be talking about that in just a little while. Both films are opening this are imminent. We have the film Motherland is already here playing here in New York at the Cinema Village. It opened about the 8th of September, but it'll be in L.A. on the 22nd, and also it's supposed to be in Miami soon. So we want to get that up as soon as possible, which is now. And Frederick Wiseman opens up his film Ex Libris about the New York City Public Library. That opens in New York Wednesday, which is probably the day you're hearing this or the day it's kind of making its way out there. But I did want to get the show up so as quickly as I could. So it may even sound like a little bit here. Okay, so we're going to talk to Fred Wiseman, and then we'll talk to first we're going to talk to Ramona Diaz here about her film Motherland. Motherland takes us into the heart of the planet's busiest maternity hospital in one of the world's poorest and most populous countries, the Philippines. The film's viewer, like an unseen outsider, dropped unobtrusively into the hospital's stream of activity, passes through hallways, enters rooms, and listens in on conversations. At first, the surrounding people are strangers, but as the film continues, it's absolutely intimate, rendering the women at the heart of the film. At first, the surrounding people are strangers, but as the film continues, it's absorbingly intimate, rendering the women at the heart of the story increasingly familiar. Three women, Leah, Ira, and Lerma, emerge to share their stories with other mothers, their families, doctors, and social workers. While each of them faces daunting odds at home, their optimism, honesty, and humor suggest a strength that they will certainly have to have, which they will certainly have to summon in the years ahead. If you enjoy this conversation with Ramona, and I believe you will, go back and check out Don't Stop Believin', Every Man's Journey, Go back and listen to episode number 126 of the podcast from 2013 when I interviewed Ramona regarding her Don't Stop Believin' documentary, along with her producers Josh and Capella. We had a nice time back then, and she's back again, as I said, with this new documentary. It's currently playing at the Cinema Village in Manhattan, and will be at the Lemley Monica in Santa Monica, California, beginning September the 22nd. And then on to Miami and possibly other cities, depending on who goes to see it. There's also a broadcast in the works, as well as a digital platform release. So you'll get to see Motherland. Don't worry about that. And we're going to talk about how in this conversation right now with my friend Ramona Diaz regarding her film Motherland.
Ilan pong anak ang plano niyo?
Hanggang lima.
Hanggang lima.
Essential. Talking to the mic.
Yes, it is essential.
They're supposed to get it. I don't want to not give them out.
But no. Some filmmakers are very good about it, but mostly not, really. And I forget.
Right, of course.
Yeah. And I just put no perks and just donate.
Oh.
I'd rather, right?
Then you don't have to.
Yeah, and I don't want to burden them.
It's
and
a burden.
Deliver,
because it is a burden. I've heard from a lot of people who've done them. Kickstarters, and they do talk about the rewards being the thing that wasn't, because it's a year later, you've earmarked all your money that you've raised, and then you have this thing, and if you're not careful, it's an expensive, time-consuming distribution in of itself is the rewards.
It's a whole other line item.
Yeah. Trying to minimize physical product. Like I'm doing, one thing I'm doing is a DVD giveaway, but I'm only going to do a handful of those because that's going to be like shipping and handling.
No, that's a lot.
It is.
Anything physical.
So I'm trying to get as many non-physical things memberships, digital things.
Yeah. Best.
Handshakes.
Oh, yeah, I think the handshake. I'd rather not even.
Right.
Let's stop the pretense. It's okay. I'll just give you the money.
Exactly.
And, I'll support you as a filmmaker. And so to take the stress off as well.
When was the last time we did a podcast, Ramona? It was like...
For Don't Stop,
Don't
maybe?
Stop Believin' was the last time, right?
I believe so. It's been a few years.
Your two producers were with you at the time. It was
Fahoum.
And
Josh Green
were on the same thing. Yeah. And that, I'll look that up. So in case people want to get the full Ramona, they can go back and look at that, listen to that one too. That was a fun documentary.
It was fun. Very different from this documentary, but a lot of fun.
Yeah. But the new one is called Motherland, and it's the two documentaries share one thing, and that is they both are essentially about the Philippines, some aspect of the Philippines.
Yes.
You had a singer who was plucked out of nowhere by the lead guitar player for
Neil
Neil
Schon, yeah,
right, from Journey, and plucked out this young man who was just on the kind of brink of he was already poor.
He's on the brink of nothing. Of giving up.
Of giving up his music career, and then it's like this incredible fairy tale. And now we have something a little bit, also it was an astounding cinematic thing. And this is an astounding in a different way, because you take us into this one room, essentially. Almost the entire thing takes place, doesn't it? In this one room. It's a big room. It's a hospital ward.
Yeah.
It's a maternity ward. In the Philippines. Now, is this in Manila or is this in some other city?
It's in Manila.
Oh, it is in Manila.
So, yeah.
Okay. And it is the largest, correct me if I'm wrong, I'm just setting things up and then we're going to get into it. You're going to correct me. Usually what happens is I say a lot of things that are inaccurate.
I'll correct you.
The guest corrects me and then they are off on it running. so it's the it has more birthing going on than any other maternity ward in the world?
It is the busiest maternity hospital in the region for sure. and then they claim the world, which we've never really been able to truly verify, but it seems so. I believe it is like 100 births per 24 hours, which is, okay, so to give you a comparison, the busiest maternity hospital here in the U.S., I think, which is somewhere in Florida, mm-hmm. is like 54 births per 24 hours.
And that's so really, probably incredible.
Yeah. Right. Yeah, so that's a comparison. So it is, as you see in the film, it's pretty, it's like, it's chaotic, right? But this, it's organized chaos.
Well, what emerges, and I think this probably separates itself from any other hospital, at least one, any in the West, is what emerges is a kind of a almost like a little town. There's a community Absolutely. Of sisterhood, if you will. I mean, I know that not everybody is in it, but we do get to meet at least four or five women in your film who are all have various circumstances going on in their lives, but you know they all share one thing, and that is giving birth. And the other flip side, which I do want to get into, which I found also actually a little bit more of surprising or new information for me, was of birth control and sex education, for lack of another word, I guess.
Yeah.
That was going on too with the practitioners.
There's no early sex education in the school system in the Philippines.
It's a little after the fact.
Yeah, exactly. So you're always playing catch up, right?
Yeah.
Which is, you know, the crux of the problem. Mm-hmm. I mean, have we started?
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
I get that a lot, actually, because I kind of slide into things very conversationally.
Okay.
So
All
you don't
right.
know
so
when the podcast
no,
begins
okay.
and you don't know when it ends. Okay. It's just happening.
All right. That's good. I mean, I'm into that.
But if you wanted to take a step backward and set something up, I understand.
No,
why
I mean,
you're
yeah,
at.
I was going to say, because the whole reason for this film, I mean, I was researching a completely different film. Not completely. I was researching another film that had to do with reproductive health and reproductive justice
okay.
in Manila. And it was about the reproductive health bill that was coursing through Philippine Congress. So it was more a procedural film. Mm-hmm. But I was also very interested in the social and cultural drama around it. Because mm-hmm. it was a very basic, it was a seemingly basic bill, right? It provided a contraception for everyone. Widely accessible family planning methods, early sex education, and maternal care. So it seems so simple, but you know the Catholic Church is very powerful in the Philippines, and they were against it because they're
sure.
against contraception, etc. And of course, sex education. You know, it's like
Forget
it
that.
Promotes sex or something. You know all the arguments. So that was what I was interested in. So I was researching that. And while I was researching that film in Manila, they said, you really have to visit Fabella Hospital because it is a baby factory, they call it, in the Philippines. So when I visited the hospital, I knew within the first 30 minutes that my film was in that hospital. And I would still be
okay.
dealing with the same themes, like, you know, reproductive justice, reproductive health. It was all in there. It was more cinematic. And I could... Because this other film I was trying to wrap my head around was all the arguments I've heard. You know, it was very, there was no nuance. I couldn't find any nuance in the arguments pro and against this bill. And even the social drama around it was, wasn't all I had imagined when I wrote the proposal from afar. You know, you read all these articles from, I'm here in the U.S. and it's happening in Manila, so I imagine it to be more dramatic and robust. And you get there, not really, right? Mm-hmm. So I was saying, oh, my God, you know, what is my film? So when I visited the hospital, I'm like, okay, this is it. This mm-hmm. is a film I'm meant to make. Mm-hmm. So that's how that started. And, yes, playing catch up with... And then you see family planning scenes in the film. They are playing catch up because there is no sex education. And some of these women are very also tied to the Catholic Church and
right.
what their parents want.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah.
They're at real odds. They're stuck in this very difficult position.
Yeah.
And it seems like a state of an emergency as far as, well, the state is concerned, because I guess maybe poverty and overpopulation, I assume. And unemployment clearly is a big problem.
Oh yeah,
because,
absolutely.
You know, because it comes up in the film.
Yeah.
And so in order, you have to tackle these issues. Like, and so one way is to try to lower the population, to encourage those women who probably already don't necessarily want to be pregnant, but give them some some options, you know.
Yeah, and just like really, and it comes down to education, because remember that one woman that the nurse was talking to when she goes, well, you know, we really, you know, we only had sex once, you know, it was an accident. And the nurse goes, yeah, you know, accidents happen. Mm-hmm. It takes only one time. Mm-hmm. So she, to even make that connection, because she goes, no, we weren't really having sex. It was just once. Sure. It was an accident.
Right.
She goes, well, yeah, that's what happens.
Right, exactly. The idea is to communicate, not to challenge the women. They're dealing with what their world as best as possible, it seems.
Yeah.
You know? And so the smarter nurses have to kind of deal with that, you know, and not try to undo this tangled situation.
Because that would be so complicated.
They're talking, you're going against the church, which is, as you already said, was extremely powerful, a voice in the Philippines. So.
Yeah, so they do have to straddle. It's a very fine line, right? Because they can't seem to be coercing the women to, you know, take the IUD, ligation almost especially.
Yeah.
But yet try to be, you know, sort of forceful enough, like tell them really the situation. You're 26. You've had six kids. Maybe it's time to think of an IUD, you know?
Yeah.
So that very basic thing. And, oh, I don't want to. I want to go home. It's like, no, you're here already. Yeah. Please do it already. And it's free. Oh, my God, you know?
Right.
Yeah.
Well, you know, it's an investment. I mean, right? Because if you can somehow change the cultural mind frame around birth and, you know, sex education, et cetera, you know, in the long term, you're saving, the country saves money because you don't have like way, I mean, you know, there's hopefully a decrease over time in population,
hopefully.
You know,
but
yeah, and resources,
you know,
there's limited resources in the Philippines, right?
Yeah.
And employment, just to name two things. And, you know, it's clearly they're at a they're hemorrhaging. Somewhere in the country, right, is hemorrhaging in various ways. So
yeah,
there's an urgency to change things, right?
To
figure out how to
stem the tide.
Yes,
you know, really.
Right.
But it's still, you know, I'm going to give away the ending of the film. But,
well,
you know, the film talks about the 100 millionth baby, right, at the end.
Oh, yeah, right. I almost forgot.
Yeah, so it's 100 million in the Philippines. We filmed it, when did we film? 2014. So now it's like 102 million because it grows by, what is that? Some percentage year, 2% a year? I don't know. But now
sounds
it's 102.
Good.
So it's still growing, you know?
Yeah.
Obviously, you know, it's not going to decrease, obviously, but it's still at the pace where it's not sustainable.
Mm-hmm. I've had on this week, I'm going to be putting up a conversation with Frederick Wiseman. There's almost a kinship here, you know, a man who makes, I guess, the most accessible word I can put out there is verite filmmaking, you know, where you're not talking, interviewing people. We're just essentially a fly on the wall. And as we are in, what's the name of the hospital again?
Fabelia Memorial Hospital.
Memorial Hospital. I always feel uncomfortable when they call a maternity ward a memorial hospital. I don't like those. But I get it.
Yeah,
no, I understand.
But it is a maternity hospital.
It is a maternity hospital. Yeah.
Nothing else happens there but births.
It is a baby factory, as they say, rather. But was this a conscious effort, or did you think there's just really no other way except for to train your cameras on these women?
Yes, from the very beginning. So it was intentional.
Yeah.
Because I think I wanted to give the audience the experience I had when I first visited the hospital. I was just dropped into like the middle of the ward and I had to figure it out. I wasn't talking to any of the staff. I was just walking around listening to the snippets of conversation amongst the women on that, you know, the beds. And I said, wow, this is really incredible. So I wanted to mimic that experience in the film.
Mm-hmm.
So really, the film just drops you in the middle of this hospital.
It does.
And then you're off to the races, right?
There's no real beginning and end. The ending, you could argue, is, like a few of the women leave. They kind of, you know, we watch them.
Yeah, it's just a slice.
There is, you know, and you get a sense of closure. It's true. And then there is that little, you know, spoiler. I want to talk to you, though, about your relationship with the Philippines. As a Filipino yourself and as someone who makes films about the Philippines, I know you premiered at Sundance, which congratulations on that. That's got to help you. And you've had this really great career as a documentary filmmaker.
Thanks.
But what's your relationship with the Philippines as far as showing your films?
It You know, like everywhere, documentaries are hard sell, mm-hmm. difficult. But my first film, Imelda.
I almost forgot about that. Yeah, I've seen that, by the way. Yeah. So. I have seen it. You just didn't do the podcast after Imelda. That's the problem.
Oh, we didn't. Was it even I don't know.
Maybe. I don't think I had started, but maybe we met during that period, possibly, because I was working at the POV for a period.
Oh, okay.
No,
it was in IL. Oh. It went to IL.
Okay.
But, you know,
that's independent lens.
Oh, yeah, that's independent lens.
Sorry.
Yeah, so Imelda was the very first documentary released theatrically mm-hmm. in Manila. Mm-hmm. And it was highly successful simply because, you know, it's Imelda.
It's called Imelda.
And also because she sued me. I don't know if you know that. She sued.
Oh, let's get into
it. She sued me and my distributors for invasion of privacy mm-hmm. and sullying her good name.
Did you have, it's been a while. I do remember seeing it, but it's been a long time. Did you interview her?
Yes, I mean, she's
all,
in it.
All, she gave us full access to her life.
Yeah.
And what was her situation during the film? Was Ferdinand dead or did he already pass away some time ago?
I think she was congresswoman.
Oh, right.
From her hometown, from Leyte.
Okay.
So she was actively politics.
Okay. Yeah.
And then she returned from exile, obviously, uh-huh. you know, to be congresswoman.
Right.
And I think her children had returned from exile. So they were on the rise again, mm-hmm. the Marcuses. That was the time. But also, I came into her life when the media, Jenna had gone home. Right, so she wanted some kind of attention. I think that's why she said yes. She said yes to everything. I mean, we were fully in her life.
I don't know if it's addiction, but you know, attention.
I think people are used to media attention.
Yeah.
Never get
attention.
Over it.
Attention.
Yeah,
I agree.
Yeah, and politicians, most especially, you know.
Yeah.
Especially they were in power for very long. So I think I came into her life at the right moment. But at the end of the day. You know, I had a conversation with that also premiered at Sundance. So I had a conversation with her before the premiere. I showed it to her, not personally, but I had someone show it to her, and she didn't really have. She had minor problems with it, mm-hmm. but then
which is to be expected, right?
Yeah, and I told her, you know, we can't change it anymore, but she let it go. She was fine. The only time she really then turned around and sued us when it got reviewed, right, by the press, because it had a theatrical out here. It was at the Film Forum, etc. So the Times reviewed it, and then she suddenly saw herself through the eyes of the critics.
I see.
And so they called her pariah and everything. Oh. And that's when she said, oh my gosh, no, this is not a good film.
Well, the genie's already out of the bottle.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah.
Okay. Also, one little quick question. So she gave you full access, but but that also includes final, because she doesn't have any decision on
any editorial control.
Of course, it's going to be, it's easy to market a film that you called Imelda in the Philippines and one that's kind of going to have a commercial success elsewhere as well. So the Philippines are probably going to embrace
this
film.
Yeah, but I don't think that was a given. I mean, the reason I think we beat Spider-Man 2. In the capital the first weekend. And the reason mm-hmm. for that is because she sued us. So what was a small, like, entertainment story in the entertainment pages of the dailies migrated mm-hmm. to the front page because she sued us. And mm-hmm. every day she would come out with she'd have a press conference about the case. I mean, it was crazy.
Yeah.
So everyone suddenly knew about this film.
She's
and
only
that's
helping,
why.
Right?
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
And, of course, there were jokes that, maybe we were in collusion with Imelda
which is funny, it's all,
which we were not.
Right.
But
for the record.
Yeah, for the record. Uh-huh. So that's what happened. I don't think it was a given. Documentaries still are a hard sell.
And then Don't Stop Believing would be, I'm trying to think it through and I'm just not coming up with a problem that the Philippines might have with that film.
Yeah.
That just seems in a way up with your, from your bootstraps type of story.
Yeah.
Filipino makes good, and Filipino Americans are,
yeah, we
you know,
had a
going
few
nuts.
Screenings of Don't Stop There, but
I remember that
it wasn't. It's never been broadcast. It never had theatrical run, which is so weird for us. It's like we don't know why. We don't know why that is, because it's a very
popular.
Gosh, it's a very high concept film in a way, right?
Yeah. You get it. Yeah, right, and people should go check that out if you haven't seen it. It's a lot of fun.
It is a lot of fun.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I remember seeing it at Tribeca and, it, you know, just on a big screen with great sound. And you know,
and the band and Arnell coming up, running up to the stage at the after, you know, it's just great.
Yeah. And now to this film, which I kick myself because, well, I wasn't at Sundance, but I would love to have seen it on a big screen because, this is just such an enormous, it's crazy. There are women literally three to a bed.
Yeah. It's showing at Cinema Village until Thursday. So if you want to see it on a big screen.
Thank you. Thank you. Only if you agree to do the Q&A afterward with me.
I did it over the weekend.
I know. Well, yeah,
we should have done it.
Oh, well, it's okay. We'll do it for your next film. Okay. I promise. Now that you mentioned it, I'm going to put this up by Thursday. So this is maybe when you're listening to this, everybody in New York, this is your last day to see in New York. The good news is if you're in Los Angeles, it's going to be in 2 weeks on the 22nd.
The 22nd.
The Friday, the 22nd.
Friday.
It's going to be playing at the Lemley Monica, which is a lot of the people I talk to on the show end up with their film playing at the Lemley Monica. So I'm going to assume it's that Lemley especially plays a lot of great art films.
Yeah, the Monica
whatnot.
Film Center. Yes.
Yeah. So in Santa Monica.
Yeah.
So go out and see it. Now. As a separate issue, I can edit even, but you have a broadcast?
Oh, yeah. POV October 16th.
It is POV. Okay,
yes.
That's why. Yeah, okay. So when I
thought you were here for POV. Am I?
No. What happened was I associate you with the POV because maybe I've run into you a couple of times at POV. Did we also run into each other there?
Probably.
At the party, like at their season?
I didn't do that part. Yeah.
Oh, this year? Okay.
Yeah,
anyhow, I must have looked over the notes and just seen that it was.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay, so it will be broadcasting on
October 16th.
Oh, on October 16th.
Our windows are very tight this year.
Yeah, they're okay with that, huh? But it's just New York City, LA. Come on, of course. One week in New York.
It's still playing festivals after the broadcast.
It's amazing.
It's still playing next year. There are domestically.
Here?
Yeah.
Oh, that's amazing.
In the U.S. I think happening more
and
more.
Do you have to be there for those then? Because what's the value add if they can see it on POV?
More so then, right? I should do the Q&As because that's really
what
people
will
come out.
Exactly.
Exactly.
Right. They're going to want to engage and kind of get into your brain a little bit about
it.
I have that advantage, you know.
Yeah.
October 16th for the PBS premiere. And that is coming right up. I have to make sure I put that in my calendar so I can re-promote. But I'm going to put this up as soon as possible so we can promote
the theatricals.
Get the tiny bit out of New York, the LA theatrical, because it's good to get people into theaters.
Yeah.
And then, of course, we can continue on into the broadcast in a couple of weeks.
Yeah.
That's all wonderful. Yeah, this is a great POV film, actually. I agree. I was looking for a comfortable place where we could both do the podcast, and I thought, well, I had thought you have a relation with the POV, so
I do,
and
actually.
As do I,
yeah.
So I was thinking, let me see if they will host us for this.
I'm sure they would.
They did.
Oh, they did.
We
could
have done it there. It turns out, but I didn't find out until I just found out literally as I was emailing back and forth with the guys at POV, an email came in from your publicist Alicia, who then said, "Oh, we have the apartment, and this is even better."
Okay, yeah.
I don't feel like, you know, we're infringing and should we run over? You know, there's no issues.
Right.
So, and this is a little easier for you, I'm sure.
Yeah, because it's been a long weekend. You know, I'm going from event to event.
Although it's like literally 5 minutes to POV.
I know.
It's one stop, I think.
Right.
Wall Street to York, Clark.
It crosses a bridge. Yeah,
then you have to walk a few.
Yeah, I thank you for coming here.
It's great. It's fine. I enjoy it, and you know, I get a special pleasure out of bringing people back into the show because I feel like one thing I can do with what my podcast is, I can kind of create a little community, especially with people that I just appreciate the work and what they're doing, and I think the more people that know about it.
The better,
you know.
Yeah.
And so this is your second visit on the show. Yeah. So that's nice. And so I like to read.
So second film on POV.
It is. Okay.
Yeah.
Because was Don't Stop Believing on it? Or did you have a short on it?
Don't Stop and Imelda went to Independent Lens.
Okay.
And The Learning and
The
this.
Learning. That I know I saw.
Yeah.
That was a. Right.
Yeah, it will be at POV. So two.
Okay.
I've made four features.
And they're
two independent.
The Learning was before Imelda?
The learning was after Imelda.
Okay. Aren't I doing great? I have a lot of editing to do, so I don't make mistakes. I don't make mistakes on my show.
We can do it again, so it's easier.
No. It's okay. I don't have to keep... This doesn't have to be in the show.
Yeah, I know. Okay.
Yeah, but so you had two films on independent lens and two on POV. Can you tell the filmmakers that are listening, especially, of course, the documentary filmmakers, how that's done? Thank you. Go ahead. do you not know how... I mean, that is a really an amazing... situation.
Yeah. I mean, every time I make a film, I'm surprised. It's like, really? You want this? You're going to broadcast it? Especially Motherland, as you see. I mean, that's a harder sell.
Yeah.
And there are a lot of, you know.
Yeah.
It's
a good title, though. It'll get people just on that.
Thank you.
Yeah,
but, you know, there's breastfeeding and birth and all that.
Yeah.
You see it all.
Well, you know, that was another thing I was going to ask you about. If, I don't know, you say, you know, we know that the Catholic Church, as was already mentioned, is already, I guess they had nothing to do with it. I mean, you know, did everybody kind of sign the releases? Do you have to?
Oh, yeah.
You know, and you know, here I am breastfeeding. Here I am talking about sex. You know, maybe I wasn't married. I don't know. I have these.
Oh, yeah. I mean, they were so open. And I think because I spent a lot of time at the hospital before actually shooting to explain to them what it was I wanted.
Okay.
Okay, this is a hospital that's been covered in the media before, in the press, BBC, CNN. They've done, like, short pieces, right?
Okay.
And they've been there for, like, 2 days. And so the fact that I wanted to be there for 6 weeks was a totally different thing for them. It's like, really, why?
We're going to be there for an entire trimester.
Exactly. So they just couldn't understand what do you want from us for 6 weeks? So I really have to explain that, you know, that your everyday life, whatever happens. And for them, it's routine. It's not exciting at all.
No.
And I'm like, you have no idea.
And I will say, it's just mesmerizing more than it is exciting.
It is.
This film.
Yeah.
You know, there's no, I don't know, there's no, like, moment, in particular that comes to mind. It's, like, just as a whole, watching this incredible village. It's like a village inside this maternity ward.
Absolutely.
You know?
And I think that's what drew me to it.
Yeah.
I mean, especially the community that the women form around the beds.
Right.
It is a community, and they share everything, right?
Yeah.
First of all, they share such a private space.
And an intimacy forms.
Yeah, and
an intimacy emerges, of course. Yeah.
And comfortably so, right?
Yeah.
But also because of their living conditions outside, right?
Yeah.
They're used to sharing, being in tight spaces.
Right.
But that they're very generous as well, right?
Yeah.
And they're really... like very profound relationships that form, but they're very fleeting relationships because they're never going to see each other again after.
The best thing I can compare it to, Ramona, is when you're doing a play or a film as an actor or as a crew, somebody, and you're all there and you're all crammed into this world for this finite period of time. And then the day comes and it ends. And then you go back to your other life. And, you know, those relationships are kind of more or less over. I mean, or that community has disbanded.
Yeah. But even with a film crew, you're probably going to work with each other again at some point. Maybe,
well, with
these
women, let's face it, it's not.
Yeah, but those women are probably, sad to say, but they probably will be.
Yeah.
You know, revisiting Fabelia back the next year, whatever.
Maybe. Right.
But for the most part, they make plans to see each other, but you know that's never going to happen.
Did you screen the film for any of these women? Or for the hospital?
December, because that's when I go back.
Oh, you're going to do it?
I'm going to do it. It hasn't been done yet.
Right.
Yeah. And hopefully we get a distributor in the Philippines as well.
Gotcha. And was there a POV edit? Was there a PBS edit?
Yeah, it's 83 minutes.
Okay, yeah.
Theatrical is 93.
Okay, just
so,
minutes.
Yeah.
Right. But that's like a lot.
10,
it's not easy
9,
ever.
10 minutes.
Right?
Yeah. No, it isn't easy, but at least it's like still the hour and a half. It's not a broadcast hour.
Length, yeah.
It's a 90-minute hour. Broadcast hour, yeah.
Again, Motherland, which premiered festival-wise at Sundance, it's had this real kind of quite this path. Charmed Path is currently at the Cinema Village in New York City. Will be at the Lemley Monica starting September 22nd, and then on POV on PBS. Check your local PBS affiliate for details. But it's that day is October the 15th. You said
16th.
Excuse me. That day will be October 16th.
But come out to the theater if you can, because I think it's really fun
You'll
to
be
see
in LA?
It on the big screen.
Will you be in L.A. for a couple of days?
I will be in L.A. doing, over the first weekend, doing Q&As.
Perfect. Okay.
Yeah.
Great. All right.
And then later on in the year, do you want to know what later on in the year? It's going to be an Amazon Prime in December.
Okay, yeah, yeah. All right.
So it's going to all the platforms.
A lot of people are going to be able to see, a lot of opportunities to see Motherland.
Yes. But come out to the theaters if you can.
And by the way, I just want to mention, there are a lot of, I'm trying to kind of wind it down just because of her, but you'll meet a lot of the fathers too in this film, and they run the gamut also, personality, you know, some that are really, you know, emotionally involved, yeah, and really, really into being dads, and then some of them have struggled more with it, and, you know, it's just like anybody, really, I mean, yeah. I guess, because that happens here too. Yeah. And then there's partum issues and postpartum issues, and it's
always. I mean, right? It's a hopeful.
Yeah.
It's a room full of women who've just given birth. Can you imagine?
Hormone.
But they, you know.
Yeah.
It's the hormones crazy,
are,
but
yeah,
they're still very calm and gracious, don't you find?
Yes, I do.
And they're very quiet when they give birth. That's also every women who come. I've shown this in many festivals, and women always come up to me and say, why didn't they scream? I mean, it's such a quiet labor room. And I'm like,
why?
It was incredible. Yeah. And I've asked the nurses, I'm like, you know, when we were filming, I'm like, why don't they? They go, you know, these are women who have given birth a lot. It was very interesting because I found the women less sentimental about the birthing process than the men. The men were a little, you know, more sentimental about it.
Yeah. Oh.
Of course, that doesn't mean they love their baby less, etc. But there was a let's get this over with. Let's let's just do this.
Yeah, kind of. I mean, and the first time it's all very exciting and all, but by the third or fourth time,
it's
or fifth or sixth, yeah,
or more
in
some instances.
Ramona, thank you.
Oh, this is fun as always.
I enjoyed it.
Thanks, Adam. Thanks for having me on your podcast.
Anytime. Frederick Wiseman was on episode number 254 of the podcast, talking about his film. It goes two films back, called National Gallery, where he took you through the great institution that is the National Gallery Museum in Washington, D.C., which is his thing, right? Going to institutions and filming verite style, much like Ramona did, by the way, at this maternity ward. Fred has been doing for decades now. This is his, let's see, Ex Libris, the New York Public Library, is his 42nd feature film, I believe. And it is as good as it gets. So that's what we're going to talk about. I'm going to, as I mentioned, I'm going to put together a compilation of Frederick and me, and I'm going to post this in the coming days. I'll put it on my website, and I will put it on YouTube. So if you're a big fan, you could right now, of course, go back to episode number 254, but you could also wait it out a few days, and I promise I'll get a retrospective. There are two other occasions where I have recordings of Fred and I talking at a couple of different events, and I'm going to put them all together for you shortly. But in the meantime, Ex Libris is a wonderful documentary, and it is playing at Film Forum starting Wednesday, September the 13th, for a two-week run. I should also mention that, this comes up in the conversation, but that there is also, earlier this summer, there was a retrospective, or the beginning of a retrospective, of Wiseman's work. He has so many films, though, that they had to break it into two parts. So the second part of the retrospective, the complete Wiseman retrospective, this section coming up from September 6th to the 14th, is called His Films from 1986 through 1996. Anyhow, well, maybe there's even a part 3 and 4 now that I think about it, because this is part 2 of the Film Forum's retrospective, but it goes from 1986 to 1996. So that means there might be a part 3 and 4, right? There's been 20 years more of films of his, now that I think about it. Anyhow, over the course of those 42 films, I guess they're saying this is his 43rd film. So in the course of 43 films, Wiseman has cracked open myriad institutions. New York Public Library is no different. The New York Public Library holds and makes accessible millions of images, offers lectures by people like Patti Smith, Elvis Costello, and Ta-Nehisi Coates. Pardon me if I butchered that. Circulates a growing collection of ebooks, maintains a vast archive of materials not available online, gives classes in English and digital technology, offers children's programs, and so much more. The magnificent Steven Schwarzman Building, which is, the, of course, the one with the lions outside on 5th Avenue, 42nd Street, is the spine of the film. But equally vital is the role of the system's 88 branches that often act as community centers for civic life. Okay, I'm not going to read any more of this. All I can tell you is that you got to run to go see Ex Libris, again, opening at Film Forum September 13th for a two-week run. Here it is, my conversation with Frederick Wiseman here on Film Wax Radio.
Good morning. Thanks for calling Ask My Pal. How can I help?
I see you've got one book on hold called Working with Bereavement.
Oh, the Gutenberg Bible is temporarily unavailable for viewing.
A unicorn is actually an imaginary animal.
This collection opened in 1915. In the past 100 years, every single working artist in New York City probably used this collection. Andy Warhol stole lots of stuff from us.
This is the world's largest circulating free picture file. This is a place that's meant to be used by people who make things.
In a transformation of our branches from wonderful but passive repositories and spaces to education centers.
The most famous crime-fighting dog in the country.
You want a level? How's that?
That sounds good.
Okay.
Yeah. Is that comfortable?
Yeah.
For you? All right. But I've been doing this podcast for a bunch of years, and I think actually now it's your third time.
Third time.
Yeah.
Good.
So you're up. You're a Gold Club member.
Good.
Because you came on for the one on the National Gallery. I think you called the film National Gallery.
Right.
And Jackson Heights. I love them all. Let's put it that way. It's been this one. There was a screening here that they invited me to. And I thought, what better place, of course, to see Ex Libris,
right,
the New York Public Library. And then I ended up taking my kid away, so then he sent me a link. And I watched it, though. I did watch it on a nice screen, but, you know, it was at home. But I figured, you know, I don't want to do that generally with your films because, you know, they require a lot of attention. They're longer than the average documentary. And, you know, there's too many temptations when you're not in the movie theater watching it to stop, pause, and all. But I didn't do that. I watched it straight through. I'm not saying I'm proud of myself, but I'm seeing that's the quality of the film and the reaction I had to it.
Good.
So,
well, great.
Well done once again.
Thank you.
First question, is the New York Public Library, it's a separate organization than, let's say, the Brooklyn Public Library and the Queens Public Library, right?
The New York Public Library is the public library for Manhattan, the Bronx, and Staten Island.
Right.
Queens and Brooklyn have their own separate systems, although I think all the systems work together.
At some level, they must.
But. Well, they do, and they're sorting and distribution of books and... You know, they talk to each other. I don't think they're rivals.
No. It was just interesting. I guess I kind of knew that because I think I have I've had like three different memberships, and I realized as I was reading through some of the materials, the promotional materials for the film, that they only mentioned that Manhattan and the Bronx and Staten Island. And so over those 92 branches, those are within those three boroughs, correct?
Right.
And you visited how many,
well,
roughly?
Well, I probably visited about 20. There are 13 different locations in the film.
Okay. Oh, so in other words, a bunch didn't make it into
the
final cut. And did you? This is called the what? This is the
Schwarzman Building.
Schwarzman Building.
Yeah.
And which is known mostly to people as the main, I guess, what they call the main public library, mostly known for the Lions.
The archives are here.
The archives are here. And the Lions are in the
children's library here, and the administration is here.
Right.
And I don't know, some of that may change because there's going to be a renovation of the building.
Oh, is that true? I'm going to mention we're in the Schwarzman Building right now.
We're in the Schwarzman Building now.
It's kind of
it's a beautiful old building.
I love it here, yeah. Any opportunity that I get, it's like timeless being back in here.
Oh, the reading, it's the main library and the beautiful reading rooms.
Mm-hmm. Now, when you grew up in Boston.
Right.
Did you attend the Boston Public Library much?
I went to the Boston Public Library, and I went to school in a suburb of Boston called Brookline, and I used the Brookline Public Library a lot.
Separate city, actually, right? Yeah. Even though they are up against each other there, pretty close to Back Bay. I lived near Coolidge Corner myself, so I know.
Well, that's Brookline.
Yeah. Right. Okay. So you frequented, would you say? Were you a big reader as a kid?
I went to the Brookline Public Library a lot. Because I, both to take out books and to do research papers when I had those kind of assignments.
And
I also went to the Boston Public Library.
Where was that branch?
Copley Square.
That's what I was going to say. That's where all the governmental building municipalities are.
Yeah. No. Well, that's down near Park Street.
Hey, don't correct me on my podcast in the future, please. Okay, because I lived in Boston.
It's actually down near Scully Square.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
My kid went to summer camp, and he came back with that one song. He was so shocked when I knew Charlie and the MTA. He just sang it. He said, "How do you know that song?" I said, "Well, what do you think? They just wrote that last week. They sang it at my summer camp, too." You remember that song, right? Charlie and the MTA?
No, I don't.
Oh, you don't know that song? No. I'll have to sing it for you later. I will. Yeah. I will. I guess I just wonder what took you so long. It's 40-some films into your career now, and it took you this long to get around to doing a documentary about the public library.
Well, say that about any of them.
I guess so. But you weren't a ballet dancer.
Well, no.
And you did that one 10 years ago.
But the fact that I wasn't a ballet dancer might mean I should have started earlier in doing ballet movies. No. Mm-hmm. I mean, there's no rhyme or reason about the order of the films. It's chance. I mean, one day I thought, well, I hadn't done a library, and, I should try the New York Public Library. So I called up Anthony Marks, and he said, come see him, and I came to see him, and he said, okay.
Is he the president of
He's the president of the library.
Of the library. Speaking of the president and all that, there were one, of course, the many perspectives of the, or regular things we visit along the line during the film is there some of their meetings of the senior executives, I guess,
right.
Of the library, the New York Public Library system. And one of them, and I'm going to forget her name, of course, but she was saying how, most people, their perception of the library is that it's a place just to borrow books. And that because books have become less of a popular medium with the advent of digital media, that books are less relevant in some level, or the physical book, and that they had to kind of change the public perception of what a library is really for, which is to come in for information. Did I get that roughly correct?
Yeah, no, you did. Yeah. But, I think the person that said that is the architect that's going to be doing some redesigning of some of the Schwarzman building and some of the other buildings. The New York Public Library, and I think it's true of most libraries, they're great democratic institutions. And in addition to their archival aspect, the fact that in the various branches in the boroughs, they're offering, they're very active in offering hundreds of courses to people who want to start businesses, learn languages, learn about computers. Their after-school programs. The New York Public Library is very active in terms of its outreach and contribution to new immigrant groups and to people who want to improve their educational work possibilities.
Sure, and even there's one conversation that we're privy to. Which it's such a, you use the term, there's a democratization at the library.
Well, it's true.
And in fact, there's even this very, very sort of a sober conversation. It's very serious about the homeless situation. Not that it's a problem. They don't even kind of couch it that way. They just say it's causing some conflict among other people here, but that they took this very seriously, that the library should on some level even be available for those that are homeless.
Well, the library is available to anybody who doesn't disturb the peace.
Mm-hmm.
You don't need an identity card to get in. Mm-hmm. You need some kind of identification to take something, take a book out. But as long as someone is not disorderly, they can spend as much time as they want in the library. But it's not only that it's accessible to everyone, but it offers this wide variety of programmatic and educational possibilities. The library, in a sense, the activities of the library represent everything that the current administration in Washington is against.
Yeah.
I mean, the library is democratic, it's open, it believes in helping people, it's related to the immigrant and ethnic and racial communities, it encourages people to improve their levels of education, and it's the non-prejudicial, et cetera.
Mm-hmm.
And the values that the library represents are totally contrary to what's coming out of Washington.
Yeah, well, to say the least. And do you find that it's maybe the most democratic in that regard of any organization you can think of today?
I mean, it's impossible to measure it, but it's certainly one of the great it's one of the great democratic institutions because it's not only its rhetoric, but its practice. In practice, it's a great democratic institution. It's not, you know, it's not one of those places that bullshits about democracy.
Right.
It represents the best of democracy.
Yeah. Right. And in fact, I would say that probably I'm going to say the wealthiest people, maybe while they may be on the board or they may contribute and donate or whatever, that they don't necessarily use the library as much as everybody else. I don't know either.
Although, but I mean, in a sense, this movie is a movie about New York. I mean, it's about the New York, literally about the New York Public Library, but it's also about New York because in the movie you see all races, ethnicities, and social classes.
Yeah, and there are branches all over. Did you find that the branches that are in the Bronx, for instance, maybe in a neighborhood that's maybe struggling more economically, that the library was, of course, reflected that, or are they well taken care of?
Because
I know you spent some time at the Bronx.
The library was putting a lot of resources into the poorer neighborhoods. Because those are the people that need the help the most and want the help.
Yeah.
And want the opportunity.
Yeah. The communication seemed like such an enormous priority among all the branches that you visited, because there were lots of really meetings about trying to connect on all levels in terms of all the different programs and all of the priorities that the library has. It was very abundantly clear that communication was key to make things work, maybe more even than being able to rely on, you know, financial support, which they can never really predict.
The public library, as someone says in the film, or said in the film several times, is a great example of a public-private partnership because roughly half the money comes from the city and state, mainly the city, and the rest of the money comes from contributions.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, which is what Andrew Carnegie had in mind when he donated money to set up the New York Public Library system. It's a very successful example of a public-private partnership.
Mm-hmm. When you went up to the Bronx, there's this one segment, which is where you're in the Bronx. And was it my understanding that a couple of the kids didn't want to come in to the building because you were shooting in there?
I don't know where you got that, but I never.
I know. I'm not accusing anybody of anything. So don't get defensive now.
I didn't. That was not.
Do you remember the scene, though? I think it was in the Bronx scene where, you know, they're having a meeting and one of the, what's the gentleman? Anthony Marks.
Tony Marks. Yeah.
Tony Marks. And that he came up to the Bronx for one of the, I guess, that branch meeting or something?
Yeah.
Okay. And it sounded like there were some kids that were uncomfortable coming in because maybe it was
That's not in the movie.
I'm going to have to challenge you on that. Let's go to videotape here. Nothing's happening, but I tried it.
No.
No, you don't remember the scene. Okay. It's not so
It's
important.
Not in the movie.
There is something. Okay. Maybe I need to rewatch it. I'm telling you, I watched this. Maybe I started to get in. Maybe I drifted into a dream and it took me. I thought there was a scene up at that Bronx meeting, but maybe I'm misremembering one thing. You didn't see the kids. They supposedly didn't want to come in. to the branch, but maybe I'll try to find that clip and,
yeah,
and bring
well,
it to your...
Yeah, maybe I've forgotten it, but I don't think so.
Okay. That could happen. You've made enough films
yeah.
where you're not going to remember every moment in every film. There's
well,
no
I
way.
I tend to, actually, because I've looked at them so often and heard them so often.
Right. Did you go to, not to get too far adrift from the actual film we're talking about, which again is Ex Libris, right?
It's called, right.
The New York Public Library subtitle. But do you, because you do so many, I guess we can call them either institutional or educational screenings, and right? It's a big part of Zipporah is... It's an educational
well,
distribution
just,
of the films,
or institutional. Or distributes the films, right?
Of course. And you do you often want to sit through them as you're, you know, because
no,
you're
gonna... I rarely sit through them once
mm-hmm.
they're finished
mm-hmm.
because I know them pretty well.
Yeah.
I can recite the dialogue in almost all the films by heart because I've looked at them so often.
During the editing and the shooting, well,
yeah.
you're there for the shooting
right.
ostensibly, right? And then the editing, right?
Right.
So by the end of it, you have a...
I have a pretty good idea what's in it, yeah.
Okay. I'll let you have this round then because I can't prove my case. I really wasn't going to say much more than I just felt like that might have been a case. I'm talking again about that Bronx moment, which I clearly misinterpreted. I'm not going to challenge Frederick Wiseman. But that it seemed as though almost that your camera, it was kind of recognized as being in the film because it's not frequently. Where people reference the
well,
cameras
it's very
there.
Rare that anybody objects to being filmed.
Right.
Very rare. I mean, a quarter of a half of 5% of 1% of the sequence. I mean, it rarely happens that anyone either refuses to be filmed or acts for the camera.
Oh, no, I know. And I've talked to you about that in the past, so I'm not treading over that again. But and what your approach is in order to make people feel at ease and all that... more just to the this idea that maybe the library itself was a place where some kids may not want to be seen as leaning on that as a safe haven.
Oh, that
because,
may be. That may be. But,
you see what I'm saying?
Some kids may not. I mean, I have no idea. I didn't have that experience.
Because in the rougher spots, or where they're you know, parents are working or not available to, you know, after school, it's great for kids to have a place that they feel safe in.
That's one of the great values of the library is
yeah.
They have these after-school programs,
mm-hmm.
and people, you know that their kids are safe.
Right.
Because they're attending class, and the parents encourage the kids to go to the library.
Yeah. Because, I'm thinking about, like, growing up in the inner city or in not just any part of the city, you know, and there's always this thing. The library is one of those safe havens for kids, you know, and the libraries have always made that a, you know, part of what they offer, you know, that you can come in after school, sit quietly, do your homework, stay out of trouble. I mean, again, any kid can get into trouble when they're not doing their work, I guess, or, you know, not in a safe environment, let's put it that way. So the maybe there's some peer pressure, I was thinking, and maybe that's what I thought, why I brought up that scene again. But the Ex Libris is going to be playing at the Film Forum from September the, I have it right, 13th.
13th.
No, wrong, right, yes,
13th,
it is, through the 26th.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm going to do the math here. It looks like it's 2 weeks at the Film Forum in New York City. Is it screening anywhere else, by the way?
Yeah, like, it's opening maybe in about 40 cities around the country.
Oh, okay. Well, I'm not going to drag you through naming all those. So it's opening. That's wonderful. Is that at this point even big, or is that about right?
Ultimately, it'll probably play in about 70 or 80 cities in America.
That's fantastic.
Yeah. I mean, it's not opening in 2,500 theaters. But that means that maybe you'll play in 70 or 80 theaters, which
right.
is quite good.
It's wonderful.
Yeah.
How many people can say they can do that? You know,
How
many filmmakers can do that? I mean,
well,
it's not so easy
but
these days.
You know, there's a possibility. It's hard, but there's
right.
a possibility for independent films
sure.
to get out there now.
Yeah. And it's like Jackson Heights, a huge, great press, great. I know that was a big success.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah, I mean, it was a big success critically. None of my movies are big successes commercially.
Right. Well, you're kind of challenging the average moviegoer in that sense, whose maybe attention span, you know, has
right.
been
well,
shaved
whatever.
Down quite a bit over the years.
But I mean, but some of them dedicated... are long. Some of them are. Some of them are only 80 minutes. But some of them are three and a half, and occasionally 4 hours. But I feel the movies that are long because the subject is complicated, and I feel that I have an obligation to the people who gave me permission to accurately or try to accurately reflect the complexity of what's going on.
Mm-hmm. And I you honor the institution by it's just an exquisite like window into like you know the museum the same thing the National Gallery Ex Libris. I really enjoy. I had such a I loved it. You know, I really enjoyed it on a personal level. So you're going to be making appearances in New York anyway. On the if you're in New York or in the New York area.
Right,
you're going to be at a couple of the screenings.
Right, I'll be a couple of screenings.
Wednesday the 13th, Thursday the 14th,
right.
At the 7:45 after the 7:45 screening. Right. So around midnight. No, I'm kidding.
No.
Around 10:30 or so, or whatever it is,
right.
You'll be there to greet your adoring fans. And then also the Film Forum is coming back with part two of retrospective.
The Film Forum over the course of about. 8 months is showing all my movies. They showed a group of them in the spring, early summer, and they're showing a group of them starting next week.
Yeah,
starting on the 6th, I think.
It's great to have not only you making these documentaries, but an organization like Film Forum who's dedicated to showing all of your work to people, and maybe a new generation.
Film Forum has been very generous to me, and they've shown a lot of my movies, and I. Appreciate that.
So now you're not only working with Karen, but you're working with Bruce Goldstein too, right?
Right.
With the retrospective, right? I just, you know, it's funny because in the last 6 months or 8 months, I've actually, for the first time, and I've been doing this for a bunch of years too, I had them both on separately, but I invited them both onto the podcast.
Ah.
So I have some wonderful conversations with both Bruce and Karen Cooper.
Oh, that's great.
Yeah, they came out so beautiful. They're both so, you know, it's great because people should have an opportunity. These people operate quietly, maybe Karen more so than the average, but they, you know, they operate behind the scenes. And for my audience, I think they really
well. And they make, you know, I mean, not just
because
they show my movies, but they make they make good movies available.
But it's because programmers like that that you get. It's a small piece of what allows you to continue making the films you make,
exactly.
Right? Because they're such champions of Frederick Wiseman films, and as am I, on my own way too. Well, I have a lot of memories. I grew up on the mean streets of Forest Hills, as I call it, in Queens in the 70s, and just blocks from a public library. Spent a lot of time there myself. So I may have to do a documentary about that, the Queens libraries. You know, it seems only fair.
Sure, well, okay. Then you're going to Brooklyn.
which is where I've called home for many years myself. So I'm kind of torn, but my heart is with that little... I think it was on, I can't remember the street. It was right off Queens Boulevard in Forest Hill, right by Jewel Avenue, I think. There was a small library, which I spent many afternoons
Well, there's one in the film. There's one, there's a library, I think, at 151st and Malcolm X. It's a one-room library.
Yeah.
It's about the size of the room we're in now, where they had a terrifically vibrant and useful program. And one of the most, for me, one of the most interesting scenes in the film takes place there.
Yeah. I know, like, for instance, you're going to be doing this event with Errol Morris coming up also here at the New York Public Library. I wanted to mention that. Do you know about it?
Yes.
For a second, I wasn't sure.
Right.
And that, I'm going to just mention it. I don't know if it's not something that's, but by the time I post this, I'm sure it's going to be, tickets will be available if they're not currently. I'm pretty sure by now tickets will be available. You're going to have a conversation with Errol Morris here at the Schwartzman Building. It's part of the Live at the New York Public Library series,
right.
Which is actually in the documentary.
Right.
You visited a couple of events.
Right.
And so that's going to be on Thursday, September 14th. So you're going to be in New York busy for at least a few days in mid-September. Tickets are available at nypl.org/live, just in case people are listening and maybe there's some tickets left. I would love to be at that. But do you generally get to... I don't know, hang out with other documentary filmmakers, or are you just too busy with moving on to another?
A friend of mine.
You're neighbors too, right?
Right. But actually, I mean, I work most of the time, so I don't hang out.
That's what I mean.
A lot at all.
Mm-hmm. Doesn't matter. You don't feel isolated? Or
no, well, I live a lot in Paris now, so, you know,
sorry
when
about
I
that.
Finish working, I go to the theater or something like that.
Yeah, they do love the cinema in Paris, don't they?
Yeah, it's good. Well, in Paris, it's still a city where in the course of a year you can probably see all the great movies ever made because there's so many retrospective houses there.
Yeah. I mean, within walking distance, how many did you say?
Yeah, they're all in.
Are you, what, arrondissement?
In the 10th.
In the 10th? Is that a nice one?
That's where I live, in the 10th one.
How much time do you split, if
well,
I can ask?
Well, it varies. Last year I was there for about 9 months.
Because you weren't busy. You were,
this year I'll be there about 6 months.
Do you spend most of your time editing in Paris?
Last 4 or 5 movies I've edited in Paris.
Is there less distraction also?
No, it's fun. Just I like living in Paris. You know, the food's good.
I've heard. I've been there, yeah. I agree with you. Nothing like a salade niçoise in the afternoon.
Hmm?
A salade niçoise or something in the middle of the day. Well, maybe the next time we do this, maybe we'll do it in Paris.
Okay.
I'm actually going to be doing my first ever fundraiser coming up in September. I'm going to try to raise money so I can travel a little bit more frequently, at least once in a while. So I'm going to be doing a fundraiser to kind of expand, have better equipment than this stuff, and build a little bit of a home studio. But maybe I should rethink it. Maybe I should build the studio in Paris. I don't know. I love that city. And anyway, again, Fred Wiseman's film, this I think is your 40, and I don't even, what does it matter? You're somewhere like 41 or something.
Yeah, your, 40 maybe. I've forgotten. 43.
Check
maybe.
The retrospective if you want to see all the Film Forum website and see all the different wonderful documentaries. But Ex Libris, again, the New York Public Library, opens here at the Film Forum in New York on September the 13th, which is, I believe, generally they open on Wednesdays, so I'm going to guess it's a Wednesday, and runs for 2 weeks.
Right.
It's not even that many filmmakers where they commit to 2 weeks anymore. That's great. Anyway.
Well, I hope it'll.
You will. It will. Well, we're going to make sure they get out there. We're going to tell them to and remind them as that day approaches or that time approaches. I guess that's all my questions this time. I kept bothering your people at Zipporah. I said, I'll even come to Boston just to get the long interview. But I think, like, I've done a few of these, and collectively maybe I've gotten a lot of what I need. And also we did one funny, I don't know if you remember this, but there was a local Brooklyn film, little micro cinema in Williamsburg. Do you remember this? It was about right when you were releasing, I'm going to guess, was the Jackson Heights, and they showed, maybe they showed High School or something like that. Do you remember this? And you did a Skype call-in, and I was actually
I
did. They asked me to do it with you because they had heard you on my show. So I went over there, and it was a lot of fun, and we had all this technical issues at the beginning, but it went real smoothly. So I really value these conversations, you know.
It's been a pleasure.
Yeah, it's been a pleasure.
Thanks.
Thank you, guys. I know I keep saying it, but it is coming up any day now. I'm going to be launching. You'll hear about it, though, even though I'm letting you know about it in advance to all these episodes. I did expect it would be up already. It's a week behind, but we are getting the podcast up so in the next couple of days. So, I mean, we are going to get the campaign going in the next few days. So I promise that is the truth. I've also decided that 5% of whatever I make for the better good of the film industry, the film community here, but 5% will go towards hurricane relief. I mean, it's the very, very least I could do. Let's see how we do. You know, I could always increase that amount if we do really superbly. A percentage will go to hurricane relief, though, that much, with a minimum of 5%. We'll say it that way. So do keep checking in. But I'm churning out the podcast episodes. You're going to hear, of course, about it in no uncertain terms. Thank you, everybody, for listening. This has been episode number 427 of the podcast. My name is Adam Chartoff. The name of the show is Film Wax Radio, presented by Rooftop Films. Please do take care of yourself and the ones you love. Until next time.
Broken lines, broken strings, broken